For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast.
And there's lots of things we do in health and in medicine which haven't got a really strong evidence base, and you've just got to make a call sometimes how we handle the here and now.
That's Professor Gary Jennings, the Chief Medical Advisor to the National Heart Foundation of Australia, talking about coronary artery calcium scoring. The Heart Foundation has just released a position statement on CAC scoring, which is published today by the MJA. CAC scoring is being used by clinicians to help assess cardiovascular risk in their patients. Until now, there has been little practical guidance to assist them in using the test in the most appropriate way with the right patients. Professor Jennings is my special guest today. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. The position statement is going to cause a lot of chat, I think, don't you?
I expect it will. It's certainly an area in which there are very diverse views.
Maybe we best start by talking about exactly what coronary artery calcium scoring is. What's the mechanism and why is it considered, or seems to be being considered, a good thing?
So coronary artery calcium scoring is done from a CT scan of the heart, and one of the things that goes along with atherosclerosis, mostly but not always, in the coronary arteries is little flecks of calcium. And actually, the more calcium you've got, probably the more atherosclerosis you've got, and therefore the greater likelihood of having a coronary event like a heart attack.
So it's not an invasive procedure, it's just an imaging process.
No, it's a very simple test to have. Yep. Obviously, the technology behind that is very sophisticated, but no, it's easy.
Are there any downsides?
Well, there's always downsides with radiation. Radiation levels with CT scanning is dropping considerably as the equipment gets better and better, and that's now very, very low. The other downside is in terms of how people use the information. Healthy people come in and it leads to a whole lot of downstream testing, you know, a sort of marginal level that leads to a coronary angiogram, that leads to a coronary stent in an artery that probably didn't need it, that leads to all sorts of concern. And that's a downside. On the other hand, with any screening test in healthy people, people can get unnecessary reassurance. If the test is negative, they can say everything's fine, can do all the bad things for my health that I was doing before. No mortality associated with a low score. There's just lower risk.
So the Heart Foundation has put out this position statement in which you're, I think it's fair to say, cautiously endorsing CAC scoring. Why the caution?
Well, there are several reasons for that. Number one is that we don't believe it's a helpful test for everybody. We think that people need to have a reason to do it. We don't think curiosity or because the bloke down the road had one is a good idea. People with high risk because they've already had a coronary event or something in the past or some other reason, you're not going to do anything different in them with or without the score, so we don't think it's necessary there. And similarly, in people with very low risk, obviously low risk, whilst it might pick a few people that seem to be fine but actually have underlying coronary disease, it's unlikely to have cost benefit in that sort of situation. So it's the people at intermediate risk, and the way we define that is through the standard risk assessment heart check, which is recommended now, called absolute risk. People have their blood pressure, their cholesterol, other things measured, and you come out with a likelihood of an event within the next 5 years. Those in the middle are the ones in which this test might be useful.
Useful in the sense that it gives you a little bit more information to make an accurate assessment of risk?
Yes, useful in the sense that it may change the way things are going to be managed. If somebody's already going to be put on statins and blood pressure lowering, that doesn't help. If somebody's definitely, you know, just not in that category, it doesn't help. But if you've got a certain amount of uncertainty, and there are certain reasons why people that seem to be at lowish risk or intermediate risk, there are other factors that might come into it that make you think, I'd just like to know a little bit more. Things like a very strong family history of, you know, people in their 40s having heart attacks and various other things that we know are associated with higher risk than might otherwise seem, called risk-enhancing factors.
The position statement lays out the evidence, and for the most part, the evidence quality seems to be quite low and the strength of it seems to be weaker rather than stronger. So why is there the need for a position statement? Are clinicians clamouring to use calcium scoring?
The short answer to that is yes, many clinicians are, and many cardiologists are finding it extremely useful in their practice. On the other hand, that's why this was a fairly difficult process, because we did have some diversity of opinion. People are already using it, finding it helpful. Other people who said, well, there's no randomized controlled trial that shows that people do better if they have this test compared to being managed in the conventional way. So it did need to be reconciled, and I believe this position statement does that. The other context is that if it's in widespread use, it's important that there is something out there that represents what, you know, the best kind of expert opinion that we could assemble might think. And there's lots of things we do in health and in medicine which haven't got a really strong evidence base, and you've just got to make a call sometimes as to what we, you know, how we handle the here and now.
I'm chatting today with Professor Gary Jennings about coronary artery calcium scoring. The Heart Foundation's position statement can be found at mja.com.au, where it is open access. If you're enjoying this podcast and would like to hear more, you can find all our previous episodes at mja.com.au/podcasts. They are free to access. You can also subscribe to our feed at Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Back to our chat. And I guess any benefits at this stage are still outweighing the harms, perhaps?
I think if it's used carefully and cautiously in the way we recommend it, it's much more likely to be helpful than not. The other context is that our absolute risk equation that we're using derives from a 2012 occasion. We know it's out of date, and in fact, we're in the process of revising that. And calcium scoring, along with a whole lot of other new tests, will come into consideration at that time. So this position statement is a bit of a holding operation to say there's more coming, will be more data, more research, more information, and we're also reviewing the absolute guideline overall. But this is where we stand, we're here and now.
When is the update to the guidelines coming? Do you know?
It's planned to be out by October 2022.
What are other countries doing in regards to calcium scoring?
Most countries are in the same situation as us. That is that the test is out and about. It's not reimbursed by insurance companies or governments, so people are paying out of their pocket. But there are cautious recommendations from, say, the European Society of Cardiology, the American Heart Association, saying that there are certain circumstances where in discussion with the person themselves, clinicians might consider recommending this and actually using the information to alter their management plan.
So let's get a bit specific. If I'm a GP or a cardiologist, what kind of patient should I be thinking maybe a calcium scoring test is a good idea here?
I would be considering it in people that are in the sort of coronary disease prevention sphere, those that are concerned about it. We're recommending everybody have a heart check at the age of 45, but sometimes people have got reasons to be concerned about it, particularly Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australians. I would then do the standard heart check. And if the history and the heart check suggested that somebody wasn't in a very high risk group already and needing treatment, but was in a moderate risk group, then I'd be talking to the person about what other factors might be involved. Do they have, are they on particular treatments that might influence the risk of heart disease, for example, antipsychotics? Are there inflammatory diseases that they're suffering from that we know can be associated with coronary disease without necessarily having the same risk factor profile? Quite a list of these things, which are published in the position statement. And if any of those are present, then you might want to do a test such as this to just refine the situation a little bit more. In somebody who's already had a test, because these things are being done all over the place, if they come to you with a score of zero, we know that's generally associated with very low risk, and you might consider recategorizing them from an intermediate to a low risk.
And what's the upper limit of that? Where does it change from medium, intermediate risk to high risk?
We talk about, this comes in a particular unit, a score called Agatston units. We talk about, as I said, zero being very low risk, 100 being cause to recategorise somebody to a higher risk state. There are also levels related to age, because this score gets larger with age, and people above the 75th percentile for their age are another group in which you would probably recategorise their risk into a higher level.
You talked a little bit about the Indigenous population. Do those scores change for Indigenous people, or is it just the age at which we should be doing those tests?
Well, as in a lot of areas, we don't have much in the way of data to support that. You know, logically, you might consider this test in Indigenous populations at a younger age than you might otherwise think of it. And clearly, there's the opportunity to manage people that come out with high scores, although so many, sadly, Indigenous people have got high risk, which you can identify from standard clinical factors anyway. Yeah. There are important equity issues, given it's a test that the user pays for, of course, and of course it's more widely available in inner city areas than rural and remote communities. And like a lot of new technologies, sometimes they can exaggerate inequity.
Do we know what the cost is in dollar terms?
The cost depends on the provider, and anecdotally I can say that it varies hugely around the country. Typically where I refer people, it's in the order of $100 to $200, but it can be much more.
Does the Heart Foundation have an official position on the vaccine rollout?
Yes, get it as soon as you can. That would be one important way towards making sure that if you do get COVID, A, it'll be mild, and B, it won't affect your cardiovascular system. Because as you know, the complications in people with pre-existing cardiac disease were much higher than in the rest of the population.
Do you care which vaccine we get?
I don't personally, and I've had the AstraZeneca because the odds are so very much greater in favour rather than the very small risk that some people have sadly suffered from. I guess there is going to be some advantage down the track in the mRNA vaccines because they can be adjusted.
Thank you so much, Gary, for your time. I really appreciate it.
Not at all.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.